Great. Well, it's so nice to see you. I'm sorry not to have been here last year. I think I was down to have been here last year, and then I fractured my spine, and so ended up not coming. So it was delayed by a year. Maybe you didn't know that. I don't know. But this has been long. This has been 2 years in the making, this particular morning. So I normally speak on the Old Testament or on Hebrew. Speaking on families is a rather different thing. It's a slightly awkward thing, an embarrassing thing, because people look at you and think, well, you're speaking about it, you must be the expert. And of course, that's not the case. I'm absolutely not an expert. I'm further on than some of you in some respects with my parenting in terms of age of children, but I'm not necessarily at the end of the road. In fact, life is just beginning in some ways with teenage children. So what I'd love you to do at the start, if I may, to draw a square, this is slightly eccentric, but you'll get to draw a square somewhere about 2 inches by 2 inches, or about 4 centimeters by 4 centimeters. Just to, you know, like a frame. Got a pen here, if you need a pen? You do need pens. Hi. So about, 2 inches by 2 inches, something else, okay? I've got another pen if you need another pen. Anyone, a pencil? Okay, what I'd now like you to do is to draw a picture of someone else who's in this room who is not your husband or wife. Maybe someone you probably don't know that well. Okay, I'm going to draw a picture of them.
In the square.
What? Inside the square, yes. You've got a minute to do that. Okay. Have you drawn your picture? Now I'd like you to go and show it to the person that you've just drawn it off. It's me. Okay. Stop. Now sit down. When you give that task to kids, they love it. And when they show it to their friends, there's no hint of embarrassment or fear or awkwardness at all. When you do it with adults, it's finding the drawing, but you feel slightly uncomfortable. When it comes to showing it to someone, you have that sort of slightly awkward feeling. It's a bit embarrassing. You feel that you should have done a bit better than you have done. You haven't really done justice. And you can also feel a bit guilty that it's not quite as good as it should be. When we come to talk about quiet times and family devotions, it seems to me we're in the same kind of zone. As in, we all feel it's not perhaps quite as good as it should be, or we feel it ought to be. And it could be a bit better, should be a bit better, and it's a little bit embarrassing if other people could see that that was the case. One of the disadvantages of being a stranger is I don't know you well. One of the advantages is I can ask things and say those sorts of things and I can get away with it. But I hope this will be a place in the forum where there's actually an honesty and an openness about this. Because actually, we all struggle in the way that we all struggle with this kind of whole area. And this is a chance to be encouraged. So I don't want you to go away from today feeling guilty or despondent, but to be encouraged and motivated. So we'll look a little bit about the why, but mostly about the how. But as I say, the main aim of it is for encouragement. But it does require honesty, because it has some discussions and so on. That's a little bit of a way of introduction. We're not going to be talking specifically about parenting, though that will obviously come into the place. It's worth also up front drawing a distinction between priorities, which I take it are non-negotiable, biblical priorities, principles, which have got some flexibility of discussion, and then practice, which will vary dramatically. And I'm not going to be suggesting that there's some blueprint you have to fit into, because there's a whole number of flexible things that need to be thought about. When I asked my colleagues at Wycliffe Hall about this, one of them said to me, he said, well, I had lots of theories and then I had kids. And there's that kind of element as well, that you start with the best of intentions. So what we'll do is we'll spend an hour going through various things, have a break for coffee, and then another hour after that. Chance for question. I think there's a question box. Is that right, Tim? Where you can... There's a question box. So at half time, you can put a question in the question box if you prefer to do it anonymously or whatever, and then we'll try and tackle those as we go. Practical more than theological. But at this point in time, I'd love you just to jot down two things that you'd like from this morning. Okay. You don't have to tell me, share them now. Though I said it's meant to be practical and the what rather than the why, it is important, it seems to me, to start with the why. So what we're going to be doing after a little introduction we've just been through is to look a little bit at the why, then father your children, which is effectively talking to the Lord about our children, or talking to the Lord in prayer. Second, then children, your father, which is, if you like, talking to your children or your children about the Lord, children, your father. And the way I'm going to do it, and it's maybe slightly eccentric, but I was trying to think, I wanted to embed the whole quiet time and our own quiet time discussion within the children, your father. But we'll see why I've done that later on. So we'll be getting to that, but it's going to be within the framework of family devotions. So first of all, then, if we head to why, what it would be good if you head up Deuteronomy chapter 4. It's page 129. I'd love to be able to talk to you lots about Deuteronomy, because that's an excuse. I'll say a little bit. So, anyone remember the scene of Deuteronomy? Where are we? Okay, so let me give you a scene. The Israelites have come out of Egypt, they've been to Mount Sinai, they've had the law revealed to them there. They then head on towards the land. They make a grumble in the wilderness. They wander around for 40 years as a result. And they've arrived on the edge of the plains of Moab. In the plains of Moab, on the edge of the promised land. They're looking over the Jordan into the promised land. That's the kind of scene. And what's going on? Moses is about to die. He's been told that he will not enter the promised land. He's been told he won't enter. They've been told they're going to wander for 40 years and then head into the land. And the beginning of Deuteronomy, it says it's in the first day of the 11th month of the 40th year. So you're on tenterhooks because Moses is about to die and the people are about to enter the land. And so he's saying, this is how to get into the land. This is how to live inside of the land. And it's an extraordinary thing. What he does is two things at the same time. First of all, he concertinas back all of their history up to this moment and all their history into the future, into this today moment in the plains of Moab. And he says, this is today. is your moment of decision. Today is the day to choose life. Today is the way to live. Today is the way to trust and so on. So there's lots of today language, which of course you may remember is picked up in things like Psalm 95. Today, if you hear his voice, don't harden your hearts. Jesus picks it up in Luke, deny yourself, take it across daily, and in Hebrews as well, that whole language of today. And every moment is a today moment, is a day of decision. As you get up in the morning, it's a today moment, a day of decision, a day of discipleship. So there's one sense in which you have all of history, their past back at Sinai or Horeb, their future into the land is all in this today in the plains of Moab, on the edge, ready to look in. But you've also got alongside that, everything concertinaed in this time thing, you've got different generations that are in view. And if you look at chapter 4 and verse 9 and 10, probably hear enough of my voice. So would someone like to read it loudly? Tim, thank you.
Only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you don't forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their children after them. Remember the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, and he said to me, assemble the people before me to hear my words so that they may learn to revere me as long as they live in the land and may teach them to their children.
Thank you, Tim, very much. One of the extraordinary things about the book of Deuteronomy is that, if you recall, that whole generation who had come out of Egypt died in the wilderness. So in one sense, those that did see a Horeb were kids at that time, but most of them hadn't seen anything. Yet he's saying that, take yourself back to that moment in remembrance. Remember back to that day at Horeb. And then verse 9, so what your eyes saw, don't let them slip, verse 9. Then it goes on, teach them to your children and to their children after them. So there's this notion of looking forward into the future that goes with that. And you notice there's a great picture of what church is like here. Verse 10, so remember the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb when he said to me, assemble the people, gather, that's what you're doing, you gather to hear my words, so you gather to hear God's word, so they may learn to revere me, keep on serving the Lord as long as they live in the land, and they may teach them to their children. So this process of gathering, hearing God's word, learning to revere the Lord yourself, and passing it on to the next generation, that fourfold thing, do you notice? Gather, hear, revere, pass on, teach. And this is the basic principle Deuteronomy sets up. And then there's another famous place, just a couple of pages later, page 131. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 9. Now, shall I ask someone to read again? Would someone like to read this? Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Andrew.
Thank you.
Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols to your hands and bind them on your forehead. Write them on the door frames of your houses.
Thank you very much, Andrew. So what did you notice about for children here? Anyone to? A sense of impressing. It's a curious word in the sense, you know, it's that imprint on them. You think of a little bird when it hatches from an egg, there's that sense of looks up, the first thing it sees, and it's imprinted, that image is imprinted on them, and they're the paternal, so the parental figure from that moment on. And that same idea of imprinting, impressing on them. So that's the picture that they get. Thank you. Anything else that you notice here? So it's something about all the time. Yes. So Hebrew's got a very characteristic way of talking. It talks about heaven and earth, when you're standing up, when you're sitting down, when you're on the road, when you're at home. It's a way of saying both and, meaning everything, everywhere. And so do you see here, verse 7, talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road. In other words, wherever you are, on a journey or at home, or when you lie down, when you get up, every time of day. That sense of it being not just a church activity, it's an all of life kind of activity. Yes, thank you. Let's head across, if you may, to Proverbs chapter 4. Page 448. There are many connections between Proverbs and Deuteronomy, and some wisdom language is picked up here, but it echoes the commands of Deuteronomy in some ways. Now we've got, we're going to hear a sermon and a half, or from here, as in verses 1 to 13. So perhaps we might have a few couple of different voices here. Thanks, Nick. You can start off and then you can hand the baton on to someone else when you've finished.
Listen, my son, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching. When I was a boy in my father's house, still tender, and an only child of my mother, he taught me and said, lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. Wisdom is supreme, therefore get wisdom. Though it costs all you have, get understanding. Esteem her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will set a garden of grace in your head and present you with a crown of splendor.
Thank you. Someone else, let's go. Yes, thank you. So this is, Proverbs is very interesting in the sense that it's a father and often a mother talking to, tends to be a son that's in view here, preparing to, go out into the world and so on. Some people have thought that the language of hearing and a son, hear my son, is that of a teacher to a pupil, because you can find that language elsewhere in the ancient Near East. But in fact, because the mother is obviously clearly involved as well at some places, it is much more likely to be within the family setup than what's going on here. It's the parent teaching, modelling, guiding, leading the child, the son. And this is right through. And again, was there anything you wanted to pick up or did you notice here about family life and family devotion and those kinds of things? Okay, so there's a sense in which the parental instruction is the means to wisdom. And in fact, in Deuteronomy, it's the same thought. It's the way to life in the land is listening to your father. And father and mother, honouring your father and mother. Good, thank you.
It's conveying a real sense of the value of wisdom as well.
The real value of what's in view. This is really precious. This is a life skill, not an intellectual exercise. This is about right living in God's world. Starts young, verse 3 and 4. The point being, and an only child of my mother, means that Because, of course, without contraception, with other things, with big families, because there's a lot of death, when you're the only child of your mother, it means it starts early. Do you notice? Do you see the logic of that? Because there are no other kids around. So it begins early. Wisdom is very precious. It's to do with instruction. And if you look down to verse 11, it's that sense of guiding in the way. It's not just simply talking about it. It's that sense of guiding in the way of wisdom, leading in those paths, taking you on that journey, taking family, children on that same kind of journey. And then we head, I love the Old Testament, but we have the New as well. So we go to Ephesians chapter 6. This is 8:27. We'll read from verse 1, actually, if we may. Who would like to read? Thank you, yes.
Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honour your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may enjoy long life on the earth. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord.
Thank you. So you have this very delicately balanced, double sided obligation. So children exhorted, told to obey parents. And again, if you go back to Deuteronomy and Exodus, and the whole notion of keeping the commandments so you may live long in the land, the whole point is that the parents are expected to be the ones who teach their children. So you honour your father and mother. It's in the context of their teaching of the faith. And so as you honour that, you're going to live long in the land. Then you come to verse 4. Fathers, don't exasperate your children. I don't know whether men or women feel... put out for different reasons that Paul talks about this. Men might feel put out. What do you mean fathers exasperate your children? It's the mother who causes the problems. But women might feel, mums might feel, why isn't it mums that are involved here? So there's a sense that you could both feel in those put out of joint in different kinds of ways. But isn't there astonishing wisdom in saying fathers? Because ultimately, that is the father's responsibility. Even if your family dynamics change through history and everything else, but so many families, it is the dad who takes the back seat. Well, leave aside whether it's home from work and who works and how I work and how the society tends to be. Oh, I'm sure you've heard that rather. Changing of the hymn, instead of take my life and let it be, it's take my wife and let me be, and the kind of it's that sense of they'll have that's the church, you know, wife the church. I do sport, I do other things, and I go to church on Sundays, but actually it's the mum's job to do the discipleship in the home. But here it says it's the father's responsibility. How you work that out in the family is up to, you know, individual families, but that it happens, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And amazingly enough, I've not got statistics at my fingertips here, but it's certainly true to say that where the father is the keen and active one in the home in terms of discipleship, that makes a massive difference to the children receiving the faith, as opposed to if it's just the mother. So just an exhortation. I'm a dad. I take that very seriously, and I try and encourage others to do the same, but it's tough. But I'm not trying to unchurch the critical role that mums forms play, of course, in this as well. So this is Ephesians 6. So you put those things together and you see the importance of passing on the faith. Of that's why it's really important. We're mandated to do it. We're told to do it. This is the way of growth. This is the way of covenantal community living. We want maturity, Christian maturity, discipleship for our children. So I wonder, I might just have a pause there, give you 2 or 3 minutes. You can talk if you're here with husband or wife, your question, or you can just think about it on your own. What do I most want for my children? Because actually that's the prior question, which reveals our own hearts. And then, what spiritual aims do I have for my children? Okay, you've got 3 or 4 minutes, maybe or so, just to talk about that with one another. I'm not saying that you have to divulge at the end. We've done your embarrassing bit already.